Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and we're back with an actual game to talk about this week. And it's finally a good one. I'm sure Ben will cure us of that delusion momentarily. But before that, don't forget to leave us a five-star review on iTunes or Spotify. And you can also follow us on Twitter at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. Now returning to us this week with lots of thoughts on his Letterboxd profile about a little-known movie focusing on provincial-imperial conflict, it's Ben Daniels. Ben, do you have anything you want to share about the good word of Shai Hulud with our listeners this week?
Yeah, Dune 2 was pretty fucking sick. I actually left my house in like the 70th minute of the game to go catch Dune on Saturday. And as I was driving, I got all the gold notifications. And I was pretty pissed I sat through the first 70 minutes of it and missed the good part. But, you know, Lasan Al Ghaib delivers. So it was fine.
You're saying bless the maker and his water is what you're trying to tell us. So,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And his goals. And then also coming to us back from a side mission in the latest Grand Theft Auto, he is also intrigued by a movie where there's lots of spice that makes you powerful, you know, for no reason in particular. It's Brian Ashlock. Brian, did you shake your tail in time to go see Dune?
Not yet. But I will be getting my spice fix later this week. So,
and when will you see Dune?
sometime there or thereabouts, yeah.
Okay. Well, first off, I want to apologize to our listeners. While I think we have improved our sound quality, I have a cold. So while I will be doing my best to mute my mic, I want to apologize in advance for my sniffles. But that doesn't matter because we're all going to get through it because we have a good game to talk about this week. Spurs beat Crystal Palace 3-1 in a convincing display. I think I would argue that it was. But let's start with a democratic response. Ben, how did you feel about this match?
I mean, it was tedious for enough of the match that I don't know that I would say that was like a particularly comfortable win until it extremely was a very comfortable win. But like the first half of that game was nothing. That was a nothing half of football. And then, you know, we conceded a goal in extremely stupid fashion from a needless free kick. It was a good free kick, but a needless foul to give away. And it just looked like on balance from the first half that this is going to be one of those days where you're just like, why didn't we show up? Why didn't we do anything? But credit to Big Ange. He rang the subs, and I think that is really what turned the tide. And having gone back and watched it after my visit to Arrakis, I mean, it was one-way traffic after that. They did absolutely – I mean, they really did nothing all game, but they did less than nothing after they scored, and we piled it on.
I mean, I think there's two things worth really two big positives I think worth focusing on out of this game, which is the first is they really – I mean – I understand what you're saying, and a lot of Spurs fans were very frustrated if social media was any indication in the first half. But, like, one thing that did happen in this game is Palace didn't create shit. Like, that free kick was literally their only chance or only moment of real danger. I would argue that Bentancourt, I don't think that was a bad foul. I think Eze is getting loose there, and you kind of just have to make a business decision. But, you know, that was the only real dangerous moment of the match from Crystal Palace. And I understand what you're saying about, oh, it's another one of those days. But there was a degree of control that was present throughout the match.
Yeah, but it's control and control, right? We've seen this team have a lot of the ball and do very little with it. And aside from the Timo Werner chance in the first half, which, poor Timo, I'm glad he got his goal later, but, like, that was the chance. Other than that, we didn't turn that possession into anything. We really struggled to move through Palace's press. They coordinated their, you know, markings in midfield very well. I'll get into that, I guess, later, but we did not do a lot with a lot of the ball until late.
Yeah, and I think there's, like, this is kind of a match within context, because, you know, like, if this had just happened off the back of two or three decent performances, you're like, oh, well, it just took Spurs, like, a half to sort of get their gears going, and then it was, you know, then they really, because I think, really, from Jump Street in the second half, we looked really good, but I thought this was maybe the first match where I was really impressed with how Ange used his entire squad. Brian, did that stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the use of substitutes to change and affect the games has really been much more present in these last few games, because we have actually been able to have stronger benches, like the ability to, you know, now we don't just have three fit attackers. Now you can bring Brennan Johnson off the bench and let him run at people. And, you know, his kind of work down that flank, you know, leads to the Timo goal. Like, he's, you know, him being able to be that super sub for us created good things. You know, having Højbjerg to bring on to exert some control once you're up by a goal, like, that helps a lot. You know, having the other decent players on the bench is, like, we're actually look like the team that has the depth that we had back in August and September now. And but I'm with Ben, like, it's still, I don't know that excuses, like, the tedium of the first half, like, especially as uncommitted as Crystal Palace were to playing anything that resembled, like, attacking football. And I really wonder if Timo scores that chance in the first half, if that kind of makes the game open up more, it forces Crystal Palace to come out of their shell, and we actually kind of, it turns into a game where we score four or five, because all of a sudden they can't sit back and put 11 men behind the ball or whatever. My big takeaway from this was not just the subs, but it was just, like, the tale of two halves thing that we've been doing for a few weeks now, and it's getting annoying.
Well, it's getting annoying, but like I was saying earlier, and I don't want to get too carried away with this, because it's not just Palace who, you know, have limited effectiveness in attack in the best of circumstances this year, but it's also Glasner's first match, so, you know, God knows how much time they had to put anything into place. But, you know, it's we didn't really concede any threat, and that has been a problem in the last few weeks, where we're letting teams sort of, like, create chances and get to us. And I think, you know, because I think something that stood out to me is, like, Ange has actually criticized this team, you know, in his post-game comments, you know, before and or after these matches, you know, in a way that he didn't in this match. And I don't know if it was, like, a very conscious effort to be like, we are not going to let Palace do anything to us in this match, or if it was just, you know, he's just trying to, you know, make his team feel better about everything. I'm not sure. But I do think, I don't know, it's there was a lot of control, and the fact of the matter is, I think we were just so much the better team through the entire second half that I found it encouraging and more fun to watch, you know, because I do think pretty much from kickoff in the second half, there was that attacking intent. I don't know why, you know, it takes till halftime. It was, you know, if Palace was coming out of their blocks just a little bit more, which I don't understand why they would do that, but we always seem to sort of come out of halftime with a little bit of pep in our step. And, you know, I think we did more with it this time than we usually do, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I thought that was evident in this match.
I mean, I really think I want to highlight the tactical shift, not so much tactical shift, but personnel shift in the second half that transform our ability to play our tactics. And we saw this against Brighton. We saw this against Brentford. Ange has done this a few times when we were chasing a game, but it's pulling off one of the eights and throwing Kulishevsky back into midfield and then bringing on Brennan Johnson or Son or whoever wasn't starting, and playing another wide man. And that's the thing that I think really opened up the game for us, because the way we tried to move the ball through midfield was just very sluggish and very ineffective. You know, we have, you know, Bentancur and Bissouma on the pitch, who neither of whom are particularly dynamic, progressive players. Like, that's not their first job. And then you have, you know, Emerson Royale in lieu of Pedro Porro, who is also a big downgrade in terms of ball progression and sort of attacking impetus. And the way we set up is, like, we have these fullbacks fold into midfield, and we have two defensive midfielders and then one fullback who's kind of capable of turning and taking the ball forward. And we just really could not figure out how to take the sort of normal angles of move the ball into midfield and spread the ball upfield. We just were not capable of doing that. And so, you know, the other benefit of, like, when you have those fullbacks pinch in is you leave channels for Romero and Van de Ven to play directly to Timo Werner and, for the first half, Kulishevsky. And they were just unwilling or incapable or whatever of getting that ball high up the pitch and actually turning their defender and turning that into a chance. They would get the ball, they would check back, they would check it back to a Bentancur or a Bissouma, who would also look back to the center backs. And it was just, no one was willing to push and progress and whatever. And then as soon as Kulishevsky shifts into midfield and Brendan Johnson comes in, Timo seems to wake up on his side, and that was probably to do with some yelling by Ange, but both of them looked much more willing to, when they did get that long ball from the center backs into those channels, to just go forward. And when they checked back, there was a guy like Kulishevsky there who was able to take the ball and keep pushing it forward and playing passes and one-twos with Sonny and with the wide guys, instead of everything resetting back to the keeper and back to the center backs. And I'm starting to wonder why, if we're trying to play this kind of run and gun football where we want to just be attacking all the time, why are we leaving guns on the bench and not just playing these guys from the start? You know, it's like, if it's going to be a shootout, if that's like the kind of football Ange wants to play, then let's put attackers on the pitch and in the midfield who can attack, and not, as much as I like Bentancur, not a guy like that who is going to be patient and recycle and sit back, because, like, we don't seem to generate anything when we have this sort of patient buildup. Everything is better when we're faster.
And why aren't we starting players. Why aren't we starting Brendan Johnson is what Ben wants to know.
Yeah,
why is his main man Brendan not on the pitch?
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Where's Brendan Johnson?
I think with Johnson, just focus on Johnson very quickly, you know, I think there's something to be said for that guy's legs are tired. I mean, he had an injury in the fall that, you know, he's back from, but, you know, I think he's played a lot of minutes this year and, you know, clearly is developing as a young player. I don't know. I think it's really helped him coming on against tired legs. I think, you know, there's been a lot of impetus there. I think you're seeing him be aggressive with the ball in a way he wasn't when he was starting in matches. I understand what you're saying about having a player who's going to do more of those sort of things, but right now the Brendan Johnson thing is kind of working in a way where I don't want to mess with that.
No, you're right. And I think the thing is Kulishevsky is not doing it either. You know, like, nominally, Kulishevsky is more of an on-the-ball kind of player, and Johnson is, you know, a poor man's Timo Werner. And Kulishevsky is just not giving you the kind of, like, 1v1 attacking that you need. And until we get that star winger who can actually do that, I think getting more progressive guys in the midfield to help facilitate guys like Johnson and Timo breaking through those lines, I think is a necessary shift. I mean, maybe Sarr is just that guy if he's fit, but Bentancur, Bissouma midfield is just not it for me.
Yeah, and I think that's frustrating because, I mean, me personally, and I think probably a lot of other Spurs fans, we were kind of looking at this midfield back in the fall and going, like, okay, you know, we pop Bentancur in here as opposed to Sarr, look how good that midfield is going to be, because that kind of you know, in the kind of the Conte years, Bentancur was getting into the box and he was getting opportunities to shoot. And he was also like safe on the ball and he was doing progressive passing and et cetera, et cetera. And so like, it is frustrating that like he looks very ponderous now. And I don't know if that's injury recovery or if that's just like, you know, he looked good because we were playing slower in a system that was designed to be slower. But I absolutely like 100% agree with Ben. Like this team is at its best when we are playing as fast as possible, when the ball is going from back to front, side to side quickly. Like, you know, when I was at the Brighton game, you know, there are fans in the stand that are yelling like, slow it down, be smart. And I'm like, no, go fucking faster. Like kick it out to Son, kick it out to Timo and let them run at people before they're set and they're getting back into the defense. And that especially, you know, in this game where you know, they were compact and they were making smart decisions with how they were marking people through the middle, like getting the ball forward quicker before they got fully into their structure was like so important. And having Bissouma and Bentancur dwell on the ball just wasn't working. I don't know what the solution is. Like, I think like Sarr is good, but I don't know that he's necessarily what makes the us play dynamically faster. I think his role is more kind of like off the ball and sort of, you know, covering to allow other players to do their sort of thing. And like, so we don't have, like Ben said, that star right winger that's on the ball making things happen, or we don't have like the other eight that is able to play quickly and get the ball sprayed around in when, you know, when Madison is being effectively marked out of games. And so, you know, it's nice that Ange is developing a way to kind of counteract that in the second half, but it's also like, we have guys like Lo Celso fit, like Lo Celso played in this game. Like, I don't know if he was fit enough to start or whatever, but like, I don't know, maybe he's the answer, you know, for a game like this. Maybe a Lo Celso Madison in midfield ahead of Bissouma and Bentancur has that more progressive passing, has that more, you know, drive. I don't know.
The thing about Lo Celso versus Kulishevsky versus Sarr is it's not so much the passing, which is a huge part of it, but it's also the areas of the pitch that they want to take up space in. And the way Kulishevsky in particular likes to drift back out to the wing from the central areas and provide that support to Johnson. So like they can play little 1-2s and Johnson has someone to play it back to who's nearby, who can play it through really quickly. And then he can run onto it, you know, instead of him just being like, oh, there's a defender in front of me, I guess I have to reset. And like, also, this also is a problem with missing Pedro Porro, who's another guy who will provide that support in wide areas and is, you know, a crossing threat and a through ball passing threat. Emerson just doesn't give you any of that. So like all of our wingers are just like extremely isolated wide. And that is still, even though we're overloading the center with these underlapping fullbacks, we're not creating a lot of chances moving through the middle. And so, yeah, either we need guys like Lo Celso who are going to pass and fullbacks who are going to move on past them and be receivers for those passes, and we're going to actually work the middle, or we need to make these wide areas able to penetrate in ways that is like, you know, a give and go, because none of these guys are going to just take their man on and dribble into the box. Like, that's just not how these guys play.
Well, I think that's something Brian talked about, how we played early in the season and, you know, in terms of guys pushing the ball, especially, you know, not always in the middle of the pitch, but like Madison was doing a lot of that. And, you know, I think like clearly still a talented player. I mean, his assist in this game for Romero's goal was ridiculous, but you know, like that is a man who is regaining sharpness. Like he is not doing on the ball what he was doing early in the season. And I think that's just something that he's going to have to play through and get back towards. But, you know, I think that's where we were getting a lot of that earlier in the season. And I think we're hoping to get that. And we're just not right now. I'll tell you what is working in the team. At least 2/3 of the front line, I thought, looked outstanding for the first however many minutes of the match. And I think, like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Timo Werner on the left, Son up top, and Johnson on the right might be our best front three right now. I really liked a lot of what they were doing. I think it's the best place to put Son on the pitch because, you know, I just think he's more of a threat going forward and it gets him more involved in play than when he plays on the left. And like Werner is like a comical finisher, but, you know, I mean, he was tearing Palace up. I mean, you want to talk about get the ball up the field, move it fast, get behind the defense. He was doing that. He should have. I mean, he had a goal. He could have had another goal if he had any ability to finish, and he should have had a penalty if, you know, it wasn't the Jurgen Klopp Memorial season in England. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand how that wasn't a penalty, but I thought Timo was just absolutely outstanding and added a lot to sort of how we were getting the ball pitch and what we were doing. And, you know, it's just, it's a shame. I mean, I thought he had a great man of the match. I thought he had a great game and he probably deserved more out of it. Except he's Timo Werner and can't score to save his life, but
he scored to save our lives.
He did. He sure did.
And I mean, that was a nice finish too. Like, give him some credit.
Well, I felt bad. It was funny because it was the sort of like opposite of that. Was it the Brighton game that he had that ball to Brighton? Yeah, I think it was it Johnson's game winner against Brighton?
No, Son plays that across to Johnson. Oh, okay.
Well, there was another. He did that almost exact thing for Johnson a few weeks ago. And, you know, it was nice to see him put that away, especially after his earlier miss. But I was very sad because he sort of wheeled off to celebrate that. But because it was only an equalizer, everybody was just trying to get back to the center circle and no one celebrated with him. But yeah, it was I thought Timo was great. And whatever else is wrong with Spurs right now, I don't think he's really it.
I think he's just been a really smart signing for us. Like, even if we don't, you know, take up the option to buy him this summer, I think in the position that we were in this winter with everybody hurt or away on international duty, he just made a lot of sense. And, you know, the fact that he's slotted in and does all the things that we kind of need him to do, you know, he works hard, he tries to get in behind, like, I think he's been great. And I mean, you know, it took him this long to get his first goal, but he's provided plenty of assists. You know, I don't really think that, you know, he hasn't been outstanding in any match except maybe this one, but like he's been a marked improvement over what some of our other options were going to be during this time period. And I mean, that's maybe not enough for us to keep him around long term, but like it's certainly good enough for the run we're making to close this season out.
Yeah, I mean, a goal and two assists in like six matches is a pretty good return from a guy who we picked up on a free because everybody thought he was shit.
And who had played like 260 minutes before he came over. Like, he had not played at all.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe he'll pick up sharpness and his finishing and his crossing and delivery will be better. But, like, right now, he's offering a lot of dynamism with not a ton of end product. And, you know, it's like, I'm happy for him and I would be happy to keep him as part of the squad. But, like, you just look at what he's almost doing and just thank God if we had, like, peak Son in that position, you know. What could we be doing to teams right now? And like, it's just frustrating that, you know, we're trying to figure out how to tweak systems to get guys to, you know, pick up the ball in slightly better areas and be able to deliver crosses with slightly fewer defenders in the way so that a goal can manifest from these like kind of subpar players. And, you know, it's encouraging, but it's also frustrating. You're muted, Greg. Nice work, Brian.
Yeah, me. Brian's doing it through the computer. It's funny because you're in this situation where you have a lot of these guys that you're happy to have on your roster. You're happy to be able to bring a Brendan Johnson off the bench or have Timo Werner go in there or Charleston up top or an aging Son on the top or up top or on the left. But you kind of, I mean, I probably shouldn't throw Son in there, but like, you know, you kind of don't need all of them. And, you know, especially our wingers right now, it's just like, a little bit frustrating. The thing about Werner is he offers so much dynamism and so much threat. And you've seen what our health has been like this year, like how deep we've had to go in our bag to like make up, you know, some of these positions. And it's like, you're talking about a forward who is at least like you said, Ben, if not productive, dynamic, and it's £15 million in the summer. like, where else are you going to find a guy? I mean, you know, like, I think Brendan Johnson, we complain about how much money we spent on. That's probably the going rate. Like, I think, you know, again, I think we need to be very careful that that's not precluding us from going out and getting, like, an actual dribbly winger. Because, God, if he can do that, if Timo Werner can do this with, you know, his skill set. Like, imagine if you go get, you know, like a Pedro Neto or a, you know, Nico Williams or someone like that. You know, it's just, but I just think our depth is such that, like, yeah, like keep him around, use him. Like, we're probably going to need him, especially if we're in Europe next year.
Yeah, I mean, right now, you know, we're looking at Son, Richie, Brennan. That's three guys, Kulishevsky, whoever we buy, and Timo. That's six guys for three positions over four competitions. Like, I think a first choice front three and a backup front three is like a reasonable amount of guys to carry. I think, you know, Solomon and Brian are not long for this world. You know, it's reasonable to fill this one, unless we want to just like go bigger and spend more money on two good dribbly wingers and not buy, pick up Timo's option. I'm fine with that. But I think if we're just going to, you know, spend big on somebody and fill out the squad. Yeah, I think, I mean, we talk about this, I think, every week. Is just, he's enough of a guy to be part of the squad. I mean, he's as much a contributor right now as Kulusevski and Brendan Johnson, if not more so. And, you know, we spent more money on those guys.
Well, and like we've talked about, like, the one of the things about him and Son, and to an extent Richarlison and also, like, Kulusevski is, you know, they can play multiple positions across the front line and in midfield. You know, even Brendan Johnson, I guess, he can play on the right and left. So, you know, we've got...
Brendan Johnson can play up top if you really want him to. Like, I mean, that's not maybe the best idea, but he can do it.
We've got other options. We could play Dane Scarlett. I'd rather see that than have him play through them. But, yeah, I mean, I think all of those guys give you the ability to mix and match pretty well. And I think, you know, the existence of just Timo or just Brendan Johnson or whatever should not be precluding us from, you know, whatever transfer business we're trying to do. But, like, you know, it's nice that if we bring him in, like, he's not just a left winger. Like, we can play him on the right. We can play him through the middle. Like, he's just a useful squad player.
To me, this is like, we talk about upgrades and benches, and it's like, he's who you want getting minutes instead of a Solomon or a Brian Heal. Like, he's not, you should aim to have a better, like, winger or forward or whatever you want to call it on your roster. But, like, if he's the guy getting, like, sub minutes or, like, injured, like, picking up because someone else is hurt, great. Like, that just raises the floor of your team. You know, he does a lot of the dirty work, you know, and it's not pretty. And it's like, you know, like, the finishing is, this was a lot more fun when he was at Chelsea, because he gets in these situations and you're like, oh God, there's no, like, you know, he gets
zero chance.
Well, it was like, this match was a perfect example, because him and Son basically got in the exact same position. And when Son did it, admittedly, we were up by two at that point, and it was the end of the match. But when Son did it, you're like, no way he misses this. Like, absolutely no way. But when Timo's in that position, you're like, oh, there's not a chance in hell he's putting this on. Like,
yeah, and Son, like, just put in a finish from, like, a smart angle, from distance, like, you know, read the keeper, like, all of the pieces that go into Son being, you know, maybe the best finisher in the history of football was just, like, on display in that moment. And Timo made such hard work out of it. And, like, honestly, when he broke through, I was like, there's no way he's going to score. But when he started to round the keeper, I was like, okay, like, I expect him to, like, sort of, you know, stutter step and then duff it right into his shins. And he started around the keeper. I was like, maybe he can get close enough that he'll just kind of have to tap it in. And he still managed to just, like, scuff it in the keeper's
shin. I think that chance really shows what is so frustrating about Timo. And when he was at Chelsea, I was probably too busy laughing at it to really pay attention or think too hard about this. But it's the thing about Timo is, like, you were talking about Son, how he just instinctively finds the right angle and he does all this stuff. Son makes the right decision and makes it to such, like, a pinpoint degree that, like you said, he might be the best finisher in the history of football. Timo doesn't make the wrong, like, macro decision. Like, rounding the keeper there, absolutely right move. Like at every stage, it's like sort of generally speaking, what you want a player to do there, he's pretty much doing it. Like other than like maybe taking too long to shoot, he's like making the right macro decision. It's just when it comes to like the timing or the placement, or like there's always a little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not the even execution, like execution just not in like, general. Like he is a comical player, but it's not like watching like Alan Hutton, who doesn't know how to put one Lucas foot Moore. In front of the other. Yeah, well, Lucas Moore can finish a little bit better, but you know, it's like
one time he could finish better one time,
three times, well,
one match.
Yeah, that's fair. But my point is, it's like it's
kind of hat trick against Man U that one time.
it's oh, not like that, watching like even Brennan Johnson, who just occasionally like. You watch and you're like, what are you doing? Like, again, in the, like, the grand scheme of things, like, Timo's like, yeah, no, that's what you should do. And then it's just when it comes time to, like, put the shot on, it's like, he does one stupid thing wrong, and it's like, great, outstanding. Like,
you know, but I do think, like you said, like, for him, rounding the keeper is the right decision there. Like, he's not a great finisher from distance. Like, that's not his thing. And, like, you know, us as fans, he probably doesn't feel this, but us as fans know if he shoots that from the same area that Sun shoots it from, it ends up in the stands, right? So, like, I much prefer that decision. And you know, probably in the Red Bull, I was going to call him Salzburg, but whatever the one in Germany is.
Leipzig,
yep, that's the name of it.
It's easy to get confused in the Red Bull expanded universe.
Yeah, in the Red Bull system that's so data-driven and, like, making decisions based on, like, XG and stuff like that, like, he's making the right XG decision where, you know, he's trying to get closer to the goal, he's trying to remove another defender from his path, like, he's trying to get a shot on open goal, which is, like, you know... And he just doesn't quite do it.
Up until the moment of the shot, if Kane or Son did exactly what he did, you'd be like, fine, great.
Yeah,
like, 100%. Whatever. Like, that's the right move. And then the second he like pulls that leg back to take a shot, it's like, what are you doing?
Cause, like,
and because you can see it, honestly, some of the time where it's like, there's confidence issues with this guy. Like, because he does, like, honestly, I think it's a mix of, I think he has confidence issues. And I think this team is being told not to shoot in certain positions because they need to shoot more and they're clearly all hesitating. So like there's clearly instructions being given here, which, you know, I think the team should rethink, but I don't know. I think Timo does enough well. Like, you should definitely aim to upgrade the winger position, but I think he is like all the minutes you might even like dream about giving like Brian Heal or Manor Solomon or, you know, like anyone under like, who you consider your best 11, like just give him all to Timo Werner. Like, he's dynamic and flexible enough that it's like you can find ways to. And like I said, 15 million for this guy. I know his salary is not the cheapest, but like 150 million isn't that much, or 150K a week isn't that much in the grand scheme of things these days. Like, he raises the floor on the team. And like, you know, I think we've all gotten a little sick of like you're putting like Clinton and G or like, you know, in Kudu out there. Like, get a real player, you know. Like, you know what Timo Werner is going to give you, for better or for worse. And it's been a good use of our money, I would say, and I'm happy to keep him around.
Yeah, if you're not relying on him to lead the line or to score 20, 15, 10 goals a season. Yeah, like, if you're just like, hey, you play valuable minutes, you get, you know, 5 goals and 5 assists. Like, that's more than Solomon or Brian Heal are ever going to accomplish in a season. Like,
the frustrating thing is he's like a perfect guy to round out a squad, but we already have a very rounded out squad and we don't have like the better part of the squad. And so, you know, it is a little hard to kind of fit him in because we have a lot of guys. Not to pick on Brennan Johnson, who I thought did very well when he came on. I thought the way he fought for that assist for Timo was very impressive. You know, he really bulldogged his way through the defense. Good for Brennan. And, you know, his second assist for Son was less assisty, but still a nice ball. You know, it's like we have spent a lot of money on guys like that already who are just a little limited, who whatever. And it's just a question of, do we have room for another guy like that in the squad right now? and I think we'll see what they decide.
I would say with the way our injuries have been this year, yes, we have room. Like, I am very much interested in not fucking around and finding out next year with Europe. What did you think of Brennan Johnson? Brian, I feel like that aggression is what was really missing. Like just being willing to, like, go after a man, take someone on. I think that was a big part of what was missing from his game earlier in the year.
Yeah. I think you guys, Ben just touched on it. You touched on it early. I think, you know, him being able to run at tired legs and being, you know, further along in his development with this team, with the system that he's playing in, is great. But then also, like Ben said, he was really dogged out there. Like, he was chasing the ball. He was chasing the ball down. He was trying to win possession back up higher up the pitch in a way that, you know, we hadn't been really consistently doing. Like, and he just, you know, he really, his effort makes that first goal. Like, that just wasn't something that we weren't creating that chance if he's not out there. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm optimistic about what his performances are going to look like in a year. You know, I think we've seen improvement across the year, and I think his attitude's been great all the way through this season. You know, he's not been complaining about playing time. He's not been complaining about the way he's used or, you know, anything. He's just been getting his head down and working. And, you know, I know Ben still hates his work off of the ball, which is basically non-existent, generally speaking. But, like, that was one of the improvements that you at least saw today, was he was making, you know, some sort of nuisance of himself off the ball. And then when he did, was able to get on the ball, he did good things with it. He, you know, whether that second assist was assisty or not, he got it. He gets credit for it. It wasn't quite a Tom Carroll assist, but, you know, it's still, it's adjacent anyway.
Yeah, I mean, look, he has been a very strong contributor. He's got 3 goals and 6 assists in about 12 90s. Like, that's phenomenal, frankly. I still find him limited, and I think, you know, it's just we have a lot of similar guys who are tough to carry. We're still missing an element, but if you add that element around him, I think the things he's doing are very useful. And, you know, his expected goals and expected assist numbers have tripled since last year. Like, the things you could ask of him when we signed him, he is delivered on. You know, there's other things that you hope for with him that, you know, he hasn't and might not, but that uptick that he has given and the things that he does well have been really significant. And he has been a contributor to a lot of, you know, important goals for us. And, I go back to what I said earlier. I think just having more attackers on the pitch really helps him in a way that, you know, I think the way we play our fullbacks especially is very challenging for our wide players. I think in a normal way of playing football is you have support from your fullbacks up and down the flank in a way that Ange's system really deprives our wide guys of. You know, those fullbacks are making interior runs or playing, you know, at like diagonal, like triangles, in inside the pitch for them to play off of, but that doesn't really help them get downfield and move the ball in wide areas. And Johnson and Timo, being as limited as they are, would really benefit from like traditional fullbacks overlapping behind them, who they could either hand off to and then run onto, or play, you know, a ball in for Pedro Porro down the wing so he can like do that final cross. I think it's a big adjustment to ask guys to play in this system without that kind of support. And you know, even without it, and even as limited as his skill set is, he is still rising to the occasion in a way that I think is really commendable. So, I don't know. I guess I just have to say I'm sorry to Brennan Johnson. I feel like I apologize to him a lot, even without changing my like underlying opinion. But
just like
it's a very isolated role he has to play. He's doing okay.
But I think there's, you know, it's we were talking about this a few weeks ago, just how we want to sort of get to the end of every story a lot of times. And, you know, I think nowadays fans expect, you know, younger and younger, we just expect you to be more of the finished article, or at least like have a very clear through line that you're following. And, you know, we can underrate the advantage of good coaching. And I think on this team, you can see the difference that coaching made. I mean, just, you know, what we've done with our fullbacks all year. And, you know, I think it's a mistake not to sort of recognize that, you know, Johnson is clearly adapting to the way he's been asked to play, and he's been growing as the season went on. And, you know, I think we'd all like it to go a little faster, be a little more complete, but you can't say, whatever you think of Johnson, you know, you can't say there hasn't been improvement over the course of the year, and then he hasn't taken at least some of what he's been asked to do on board. And like Brian said, I think he's, you know, I think Johnson's going to be a solid contributor to this team. You know, I mean, we all, you know, I think some of it is we all think 50 million should go a little longer than it probably does these days. And, you know, I think it's both true that that's what the market is and Spurs overpaid a little bit. But, you know, I mean, did we overpay considering what, for a player who was as limited as he was when he started the season, like what he's contributed, those numbers Ben just read off, like, I don't know. Like, I do agree with you. I'd like a little more of a complete player starting there. But in terms of guy getting serious minutes on our squad, I think we could do a lot worse. Like Brian Heal.
Yep. I mean, we're all just struggling to deal with the impacts of inflation on our expectations.
Exactly.
Why is my McDonald's cheeseburger so much more expensive and still just tastes like a McDouble? You know?
That's
the thing that we're having to deal with.
It's Premier League spending out of control is the reason why. But speaking of Premier League spending out of control and players we might overpay for, how do you guys feel about Eze like coming to Spurs? Do you think, I don't know, is he someone you want? He's been linked with us for like, what, 3-4 windows now? He was certainly the only player worth a damn offensively on Palace this weekend. Is he a guy you'd like to see Spurs pursue this offseason?
He's really fun every time I see him. I have no idea what the actual numbers are on him. And like, if Michael Cayley was here, I'm sure he'd have some logical and well thought out reason about why he doesn't do ball progression or he's not a very good passer or whatever. But just like in terms of like how much I enjoy watching him play, every time I see him, he is a delight. Like he's just absolutely, he gets on the ball and he does cool shit. And you know,
on teams where that's not always the easiest thing to do, too.
Yeah, especially, you know, that team. And, you know, the problem is he's like, he would be prohibitively expensive because him and Olise are like the only two good players that Palace have. And like, they're not going to part with them easily. And I mean, we saw, you know, how long Palace held on to. Zaha.
Yeah, that was down to some poor decision making on his part, though.
Yeah, so. I mean, he really should have left when some of the money came. You know, after he came back from United, he really should have left at a certain point when some of the money got crazy. But like, I don't know. I think Eze is just a ton of fun.
I mean, it gets really hard to prize guys away from those mid-table clubs because their price in the marketplace is like, do you really want to spend $50 million for Brennan Johnson? That's a lot of money. He's worth that to the club you're buying him from. And then they just end up in that Zaha limbo where they stay there forever because they're too expensive to buy, because they're homegrown, because, you know, they're English or whatever.
Because those clubs have money to throw at them now that they didn't 10
right,
years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly, and they can afford, it's worth it for them to keep them, and they can turn down that money because staying in the Premier League is worth that. You know, he is a guy whose underlying numbers have gone up every year, you know, dramatically. But like beyond that, he's just so obviously technically skillful and talented on the ball and you know, gets in good positions, takes good shots, etc., is creative. Like, he's the kind of guy we need, but he's the kind of guy who might just cost too much to be worth buying. Like, he's a guy we looked at when he was in the championship looking good, and we got a little gun shy, you know, just same way we got gun shy with James Madison when he was in the championship. It's like, we, for whatever reason, we're not willing to take a chance on guys who are playing well at a young age, a lower level. And
we weren't willing to take a chance on guys.
Right. And then that's the thing that, like, hopefully we have sorted out, but you know, he just might be too expensive for us.
Well, I think it's not that he's going to be too expensive for us. It's like, if you're Spurs and you're going to splurge, is that where you splurge?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, because I think we could afford it, and I think we could be improved by it. But, like, if you had to ask me, like, would you rather spend that money on a Nico Williams, a Pedro Neto, a dribbly winger, or Eze, and you can really realistically only afford one of them, like, I'd probably go with the dribbly winger, depending on who that ended up being. I just think, you know, it's like, you know, is he 50 million and we can also spend a lot on another guy because our FFP is so good? Okay, let's do it. But I think he might end up being like a 70, 80 million pound player, which, you know, I'm not sure I want to do that.
Right. I mean, like, when numbers guys get into it, you know, you look at the production, expected goals, et cetera, right? Eze has comparable expected goals, expected assists to Brennan Johnson, and fewer goal contributions than Brennan Johnson. You know, is that the guy you're going to buy? Well, like, we saw how much Brennan Johnson's production ticked up by moving to a better team. You're having to bet again that that's going to happen with a guy like Eze. Like, well, if you're going to spend 50 to 80 million on somebody, you want to see a guy who's scored 15 goals and had 10 assists, not a guy who has 6 goals and you think, yeah, but that's because he plays for Palace. And
yeah, but
that's where they get into the trouble where, like, these guys don't move because they're not quite showing enough that it's an obvious, you know, translation to a better team. You're just hoping. And you can hope on a guy from La Liga who's done that a lot more comfortably, you know, for a lot of the decision makers involved.
Or the Chelsea captain who's a homegrown product and available for 30 million because their entire transfer policy is insane. So, I mean, that's... I don't know. He's a player I'd like to have, but I agree with you guys. I think he's just not going to end up being worth it. But, you know, if he is, like, I would be very happy to see him on Spurs. I don't know. I don't have a good – my sense is he's just going to be too rich for our blood, all things considered. But I don't know that for a fact. If he's sitting there for $50 million, I think we could do a lot worse with that money.
Yeah, he's probably not. And he's 25. So, like, again, the growth window is limited.
Oh, he's like crumbling already, you know, yeah, just ancient, but, like, turning into dust.
Right. Like, I'm sure if, like, Man City buys him, like, he'll be amazing. And we'll be like, oh, so we're so stupid. But, like, Man City can afford to spend 80 million and miss. But also, if Man City bought him for 80 million, you'd feel pretty good that it wasn't going to be
Man City's. Man City's also competing for titles right now. So if they thought he could uptick things immediately for them, then who cares if he's a little bit older than you'd like.
Right. They could buy Jeremy Doku, who had, like, the dodgiest hamstrings of anybody you could think of in recent years. And he's been mostly fit and fantastic. Not that we were ever seriously in contention to buy him, but, like, rumors were that we kicked the tires and were put off by his injury history, and Man City don't have that.
You know. Well, I mean, it does help when you have. Yeah, it does help when you have Jack Grealish as your other option, where you're like, oh, I guess if he's not fit, we'll play, you know, another dynamic youngish player.
Yeah, we should go buy him since City doesn't want to use it. We should go. They should donate him to us. How about that?
Yeah, that would make so much history right with this club, I think. yeah, I mean, between the two of them, like, Pedro Neto is 2 years younger. He is putting up better numbers. I think he is
in a position where
doesn't have the homegrown premium. Yeah. Like, I think it's an easier buy that I would feel better about, but
he's also just easy. It's easier to slot those guys in. Like, it's just like, you know exactly where they go. You know exactly how they'd improve the squad immediately. Like,
right.
Yeah, I just really want Nico Williams at this point. I know it's not going to happen because, you know, Athletic, but I just really want him.
His transfer, I don't know. He's like the kind of player, like, I feel like 5 years ago, I'd be like, oh, he's going to end up at Chelsea. But like now, I don't know. He's not being linked with other Spanish teams. Everyone's like very vague on what exactly his release clause is. He keeps getting linked with Arsenal for reasons I don't fully understand. Because unless they move some pieces around, he doesn't, like, I mean, he doesn't just fit into that team right now. Like, I mean, there's other guys who are starting in his position. So I don't know. Like, maybe we get real serious about it, but we'll see. I mean, we're not going to be able, like, our ability to raise his wages is more diminished than it would normally be for a La Liga player. I'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, Bilbao does pay well. Like, that is,
they pay extremely well.
That is like a challenging thing. It's just like,
that's their whole thing. Like, we don't spend money on transfer fees, but it goes somewhere. We're not just sitting on it.
Right. So that's challenging.
Theoretically bought a potential replacement for him, for some kid from Braga. So, like, I don't know. Like, he seems to have enough hype that I just can't imagine a bigger team than us is not already sort of on track to spend that money. But like,
it's,
I don't
really
know,
go to Liverpool or something.
Yeah, but
it's just,
and we don't
too
know
early to speculate, because like the market is going to change so dramatically May 1st. Like, extensions are going to happen, contracts are going to get signed, replacements are going to get bought, and like, we don't even know what the world of available players look like right
and
now.
And we don't know, like,
these are guys who he'd like, and, you know, that's all we can do.
There's people reporting that he's on a 40 million something release clause, and that was what his release clause was before his new contract. So no one's entirely sure if that they just gave him a raise and didn't raise his release clause, or if it hasn't been reported that he has a new, I mean, he has a release clause. You have to have a release clause if you're a player in Spain, but we don't know if it got raised yet. It hasn't been announced, so maybe it hasn't, but you know, I'm suspicious it's not higher, even if maybe it's attainable for us. I don't know. We've spoken Pedro Porro into existence. We spoke Giovanni Lo Celso into existence before that. I believe we can do it again, Bellas.
Didn't we also, though, kind of speak Tanguy Ndombele into existence?
Yeah,
though,
maybe.
So.
So maybe.
And boy, you know, what a player.
His power is a gift and a curse. So,
yeah.
We have an important game coming up this weekend, boys. We play Aston Villa at Villa. I don't know. Brian, how are you feeling about it, us going into this match?
I remember, you know, not particularly enjoying the last Aston Villa match, and that was at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So not great. I mean, I think it's tough because this is definitely one of those matches where you look at it and how much time is left in the season, and you're like, oh, this is kind of a Champions League decider type situation. And you know, Aston Villa have just been really good the last, you know, couple months. I think that, you know, they lost to Chelsea, which looks worse than it would have in a normal year. But I don't know. I just Emery's done a really good job there. They have a lot of good, young, fun players. They do, you know, a lot more attacking than I think you would normally expect from a team that's managed by Unai Emery. And, you know, I they're really interesting. And I don't really know what to expect. I think if we start as slowly as we have been starting these last few games, that we're going to be in trouble. So I think really the first 20-30 minutes of this game are going to be really telling in sort of what we can expect.
Yeah, Villa are good. I mean, there's no hemming and hawing about it. Like, they're a good team, and there's a reason that they're ahead of us in the table. There's a reason they're in contention for the Champions League places. I don't feel confident at all. But I mean, I think we are good enough to beat anybody if we get our shit together. And it's really a question of, do we have our shit together? And like Brian said, this would take us a half of football to figure it out, because they're scoring freely enough that it might be lights out by the time we figure out how we're going to play. And Ange needs to do better.
I feel like Villa is a team that is set up to take advantages of our sort of issues that we're having right now. But at the same time, like, I know it's crazy to say because I think we lost that game like 2-1. But, like, I don't know if I've seen us look better this year than we did against Villa in the first half. I mean, we beat the shit out of them. And we were incredibly lucky not to have that game, like, tucked away by the end of the first half. So, I don't know. That was a different time, different form for both teams. I feel like both teams are in like kind of similar form right now. Maybe Villa's in a little bit better shape than we are, but like we both went through a little bit of a rough patch and we both kind of stabilized. I don't know. Like, I don't feel great about it being at Villa. I feel like, again, like in terms of them getting their act together, I think, you know, they play that sort of high line and counterattacking football. I feel like that's just sort of easier to sort of get back on track than what we try to do. I don't know. I was kind of hoping we would have gotten right against like the last couple teams we played. And, you know, to some degree, I think that happened against Palace. And, you know, you hope there's some lessons learned there. And, you know, you see that in effect against Villa. Also, like the fact of the matter is, as defensive as Villa is and with their highline bullshit, they are going to attack us, which I think doesn't necessarily, I think that does kind of suit us. You know, because it's going to give us room to play. So I don't know. I don't feel good about this game, but like, I don't know. I never feel good going into high leverage games. So I don't know what that tells you.
Yeah, I do think you're right. I do feel like I am much more comfortable playing against a decent team than I am playing against a Crystal Palace. You know, Brighton obviously worked out well for us. Wolves didn't. But playing a team that wants to play generally plays to our strengths a little better. I think the real issue of this match is if Clement Longley beats us, I'm going to feel very bad.
It's not going to be fun. I'd forgotten how much I hated his face when I was watching them play Luton this week. And then it was, I don't know, that it's like, I feel like Villa had kind of a backwards game from us this weekend where, like, they look good at first and then they really look like they lost control of the game as opposed to sort of what happened with us. Like, I know that was, like, a thrilling result for Villa and probably says something about their character. I'm not sure that's the best performance to be coming out of coming into playing Spurs, but I don't know. We're going to have to be finished. I mean, that's been sort of our problem all year. It's like, if we put our chances away, we generally do okay. And if we miss everything, then we generally find our way into trouble. And I don't know. I would really like to win this match because, you know, Matty Cash helped fuck up our season. You know, I think Villa was very unfair winners in that game that we played against them. I would really like to get one back on them.
Do you give Romero a free pass to get a red card for injuring Matty Cash?
No.
He hasn't gotten a card all 2024, so he's due. I know.
He's saving it up to put a leveler on Matty.
If we're up by three with 80 minutes after 80 minutes, like no. then
second then Romero, minute tone setter no, just goes no. in on him.
Absolutely. I mean, total I think that's gonna hatchet happen. Job. I mean, I would hope that conversation is being had, but I think like Romero is probably going to try to murder him at some point during this match.
I don't know. It might be a good week for Matty Cash to pick up a mysterious ankle injury in training. I'm just saying.
Like, if I was Matty, I would be running scared.
Matty, like, you know, coach, liking, I don't feel very good.
Matty is like liking tweets, making fun of Spurs fans on Twitter. So like, I don't know, man, like. That guy
he is that kind of.
I would love to see, and this never fucking happens in the Premier League, but I would love to see it actually happen again. Like, I would just love a referee to be like on notice for Matty Cash. Like, we're not like I swear, like, you know, like surely these referees have conversations about what type of game this is going to be and what these players get up to. I would love after the last match, like, you know, it's. I would love if the referees actually put Matty Cash on a short leash, but that'll never happen. So,
speaking of referees being on the lookout for stuff, I don't know if you guys talked about this on last week's show because I didn't bother to listen. But like,
thanks,
did you
Brian.
Guys see? Yeah, you're welcome. Did you see the Neil Mope comments about his?
No, I think that happened after we recorded. That guy is such a fucking loser. Like,
he'll... yeah, but like you that's lost, how I feel. Bro. The
you lost.
The yeah,
you don't get to like. Yeah, it's pretty lame if you won, but. like, you lost and everyone on Spurs clowned on you as they were winning. Like, it's not, like, I wouldn't be bragging about it, brother.
Yeah, but he got the whole team on toast or whatever the fuck stupid British thing he said.
But that's only good if, like, it fucks with them and they can't get their shit together. But instead, Spurs seemed more driven to beat you after that. Like,
yeah. No, and, like, I think doesn't he compare it to the Adebayor celebration? Which, first of all, you pretending to throw a dart is not anywhere in the same galaxy as Emmanuel Adebayor sprinting the length of the pitch to celebrate in front of the Arsenal fans. Like, it's just...
Wasn't that a game winner?
I think it was ultimately the winning goal, but I don't remember if it was like a late winner or anything like that. Like, I mean,
yes, no, it is not in the same stratosphere as like that like, I don't know. I'm sure there are.
We already saw it. Like, Saka already did it. We already had the whole, like, this happened. Like, yeah. You're just boring.
Yes. Like,
you're Neil Mope. Like, you have to be a better player to get away with shit like that. Like, you're not that guy.
Right. Again, if that was a late winner, cool.
Yep.
Fine. I have to eat that. But, like, it wasn't. You lost.
And then, like, every Spurs player made fun of you after they did something good for the rest of the match.
Literally, you part of the reason that we got our shit together and came back and won that match. Like, you being a dickhead is what, like, is definitely a consideration for how we got motivated and put our shit together.
Brennan Johnson, who has the most, I'm not trying to be super disrespectful here, but he has the most, like, freshman at orientation vibes of anyone on our team, was, like, making fun of how stupid you looked after I think it was an assist that he provided in that match. Like,
yeah,
if Brennan Johnson's, like, clowning you on, like, national television, like, I don't think this one's working out all that well for you, brother.
Okay. I'm glad we were able to talk about that tonight.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you were able to get that out of your system. Maybe we did talk about it. We just didn't tell you, bro.
Just wanted to do it again anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we have time for one question from our listeners. This comes from Lunch Enjoyer on Twitter. Ben, I think this one's for you. Which Spurs player went to the opening night of Dune 2 dressed as a Fremen riding a sandworm, and why was it skipped?
Man, I don't know that Skip is embracing the caliphate. you know?
Do we know if Skip can read?
Well, I mean,
he's got the hairline for the Fremen costume. You have to give him that. So,
I mean, Ben Davis, like, people make fun of Ben Davis for reading books. And by people, I mean his Spurs teammates. Like, so no one has made fun of Skip for reading books yet. So
it's not a book, Brian. It's a blockbuster film that the world is going to see. Yeah, but nobody cares.
Okay.
It doesn't matter that it's a book. It's not just a book anymore. It's cinema.
Right. No, that's right.
Okay. But it's successful cinema. My apologies. We have players on this team with cartoon characters tattooed on their arms. So, like, I think Richarlison is probably too cool to do this.
Yeah, maybe.
James Madison? Do we think James Madison would do this, or is Dune a little too?
Can't take your kids to Dune.
Well,
I don't think Madison is even remotely that culturally engaged.
Okay, thanks for getting where I was going with that.
If it was a new Guy Ritchie movie, he probably would have found.
No, no, we know the answer. It's our resident cinephile, and it's Vicario.
It's Vicario.
And I actually could see him doing that. So
he would go in like a Venom mask, though.
He would go as the Sandworm. Like, he would dress up as the Sandworm.
He is a quirked up white boy gutted with a spice.
he is back there consuming the water of life and seeing all the possibilities, and that's how he's kept all the balls.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Sure.
Yeah, no, Vicario, I can see it. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y.
Ben, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
You can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. You can find our podcast at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. For Ben, for Brian, For Brett Rainbow, and of course for Shai Helud, I have been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs, and enjoy your lunch.